Good morning, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, we are hosting guests from the Rasmussen Foundation who specialize in helping artists apply for financial support through the Foundation's Individual Artist Awards program. The application deadline is coming right up, and a schedule of hands-on how-to-apply workshops are running right now, including an online statewide workshop January 28th, just later this week. The awards began in 2004, and since then, the foundation has awarded 552 grants. That's more than, or topping $5 million. That's money that goes directly into the hands of Alaska artists. There are three levels of awards: the Distinguished Artist, which is usually one per year, receiving about $40,000 as an award, and then 10 fellowship awards are given annually for about $18,000 each, and then up to 25 project awards are given annually for about $7,500 each. So you can see that's a big influx of support to Alaska artists. We'll hear from two artists. In addition to our guest from Rasmussen, we are going to hear from two artists who received Rasmussen grants for their project. And we'll learn about their work, how the award helped them, and their advice for other artists pondering an application. You can find plenty of help over at the Rasmussen Foundation website, but we also list useful links on our own website. So please visit hometown@alaskapublic.org. And finally, as we discuss the Rasmussen Awards today, we welcome questions and comments. We have, two experts on the phone with us today who can, if you're puzzling over things or want to know if you can get help on something, we've got them on the phone today, and they're able to talk to you. And so let's get started. I want to share our phone numbers with listeners. Here in Anchorage, if you want to participate in this conversation, the number is 550-8433. And statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And then, of course, we'll check our email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if we get questions that way, we'll try to get those answered by our guests. So I would like to say welcome to Enzina Morari. Hello, Enzina.
Hi, Kathleen.
Very happy to have you. I know we've had you on Hometown Alaska before, and it's always wonderful to have you back. And I'd also like to welcome Tristan Morgan. Welcome, Tristan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And as I understand it, Enzina, you are a program officer, and Tristan, you are a program fellow.
Yes.
So both of you focused on an enormous push to help artists apply, bring in the applications, probably work on, assembling the panel that will review the applications, which is an outside panel. It's not done by the Rasmussen Foundation. We'll talk about all of that as we get going here. We also will be hearing from Indra Arriaga in the second segment of the show. She is a recipient of a project grant. We'll learn a little bit about what she's been doing with that and how it affected her work. And then in the third segment, we're going to hear from Sean Northover, who is a musician who received an award and has been using it to work on his music composition. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Enzina from her bio, and a storied career, Enzina, with so much involvement in the arts. Enzina joined Rasmussen Foundation in February of 2019 after 15 years of working for government and nonprofits in Alaska. She comes from Chicago, moved to Anchorage in 1999. She has served as a grants manager for Access Alaska, the director of education for Planned Parenthood of Alaska, an adjunct professor of women and gender studies, as well as fine art at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Most recently, she oversaw all aspects of the 1% for Art program as curator of public art for the municipality. She has a master's in art from New York University and continues on as an active artist now. And she actually was a two-time recipient of the Foundation's Individual Artist Award, including a fellowship in 2017. Lots of work internationally. Enzina currently serves on the Municipal Arts Advisory Commission and is board chair for Momentum Dance Collective. And in 2018, she was recognized as one of Alaska's top 40 under 40. And Enzina, you're probably blushing, but that's a terrific resume and a clear devotion to the arts. So we're lucky to have you in Anchorage.
Thank you. I feel so fortunate and lucky to have been gifted a lot of wonderful opportunities in Alaska.
Yes, it is a place like that. Many people come for just to take a look, and they end up staying because there's just so much here that snags them and keeps them going. So anyway, welcome very much, Anzina. And I'm going to now introduce Tristan Agnarek Morgan. Tristan joined the foundation in September 2019 as a Momentum Program Fellow. The program is a partnership between Philanthropy Northwest and Rasmussen Foundation to prepare individuals from underrepresented communities for careers in philanthropy with a focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tristan grew up in Anchorage, attended University of Alaska Anchorage, and studied art and professional writing there. After graduating in December 2017, Tristan began a career as a human resources coordinator with Denali Family Services, and also helped organize Indigenous youth events. Outside of work, Tristan continues an art practice. So both of you are continuing artists in your own right. And let's see, you have worked a lot collaborating with local and Indigenous artists and entities, focusing on identity, representation, and Inupiaq values in mediums of watercolor and oil painting. And folks might know Tristan. She was featured in a film, Who We Are, a short film by Alexis Anorak Sally that connects ancestral lands and art. That's another whole story. We could do a program on that, but we're going to stay focused on the Rasmussen Individual Arts Awards Artist Award today. So let's start talking about right now we're in the middle of some really difficult times in the United States and even in the state of Alaska. Financially, it's rocky for many reasons. Oil prices declining, disruption in our everyday life, schools closed, universities, online, just a real disruption in our life. And then we're, also living through a pandemic where our daily lives are so different than they were before. You are both, I know, Anzina, you're working at home. I know, Tristan, you made it into the office. but our lives, our work lives, even our family lives are really disrupted. So, it's easy not to think about art at a time like this. And I thought I would just open the show remembering what we just saw in the inauguration of a new president to the United States. So we had music, we had uplifting songs by country singer Garth Brooks, Lady Gaga sang a patriotic song, Jennifer Lopez sang, and also we had a young woman, 22 years old, who the U.S.'s first young poet laureate, a young woman of 22, who recited a poem at the inaugural. And that just to me tells us, that we can't let art slip away and just be staring with fear into the future. And so anyway, I just thought that is a reason why we shouldn't take our gaze off art. And Anzina, I know when you and I spoke, you said that it's been an interesting time for Rasmussen. It's just been a time to be nimble, a time to adjust. There's a lot of effort that goes into the individual arts program that has been in person, for example, workshops that are in person, or the opportunity for people to be together and talk about their work. That's all been shifted. And yet you say that the foundation has not altered its efforts or held off on its efforts. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, Kathleen, and I'll backtrack a little bit just to echo your statements about Amanda Gorman's poem at the inauguration. And I will just say I was so moved, and what a breath of fresh air to see on a national level the healing power of the arts and the platform that arts were given that day. And it was just such an inspirational, moving moment to tap back into what art can do to disarm and engage folks in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right, I agree. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, the foundation has a lengthy and strong commitment to arts and investing in artists and arts and culture throughout Alaska. And maintaining the Individual Artist Awards program this year was not a question in the foundation's mind. And the foundation has also looked at other ways of supporting artists through this time. You know, we know that artists and creatives have been hit hard, amongst the hardest in this pandemic, because a lot of the opportunities that they've thought or opportunities that provide them income have been paused and shuttered, like you mentioned at the intro of this time. So, you know, we've worked with our partners at the Alaska State Council on the Arts to early on create an emergency relief grant for artists. And now we've worked with them to create an adaptation and innovation grant that is for artists and arts and culture bearers and organizations. And it's really funding geared towards providing support to maintain their artistic practice, to maintain their delivery to different audiences. And so we really encourage artists to seek out the Alaska State Council on Arts for those opportunities. And, you know, it was important for us to maintain the Individual Artist Awards program this year, as it has been consistently represented throughout the years. And, you know, we know that there is a lot of need, and there are not enough resources to fulfill those needs. But yet, this program, the Individual Artist Awards, is not a needs-based grant. And we wanted to maintain the integrity of the program and its consistency throughout the years.
Tristan, anything to add there in terms of what these grants and awards can mean to the artists you know?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to get to know a lot of recipients, both inside Rasmussen as well as outside of Rasmussen. And it's just really a grant or a fellowship to be able to sustain our livelihoods and be able to continue to move forward and grow as artists. And it's really fun and cool to see what kind of projects come out of it and really what kind of growth artists are able to do within the Individual Artist Awards. And I'm really excited to see a more diverse group of applications, because I know that we have a lot of really wonderful artists all across Alaska, and a lot of really great traditional artists and a lot of really great contemporary artists. And by doing more outreach, I'm really excited to see more more artists come forward and just apply, because it could definitely help getting the Individual Artist Award, but it's also really helpful just to go through the process of getting to know yourself as an artist.
Right. That was one of the things I noticed on your website. There was many artists speaking to the process of application, and that, you know, even if you go through the application process and do not receive an award this year, there's kind of two messages coming out from the artists that are featured on the Rasmussen Foundation website. One is just the process of applying makes you think about your work in such a way that you're in a different place after you've completed the application, right? And the second one was, that really stood out for me, was if you do not win an award, apply again, right? And those two things really, really stood out for me as messages that you're giving to artists. You know, and Dina, I have a question for you. By the way, let me remind our audience that we are talking with program officers and a fellow from the Rasmussen Foundation, who are focused on the Individual Artist Award, which is a program that sustains and supports Alaska artists by giving them directly money for projects, for enhancement of their work, and also signals attention to a distinguished artist every year with some financial support. But Inzina, the question I have for you is, why do you think it's so hard to reach out to underrepresented artists? Do they not see themselves in the application category?
You know, I think there's lots of ways to think about that question. And I think part of it is, you know, and this is something that we've really tried to examine within ourselves this year is, you know, outreach can be difficult when the people who see the outreach are the individuals who already know about the program, right? They're already individuals who are tapped into the foundation and its work, or the individual artist awards, or know someone who's gotten an award. And so, you know, we could do the best outreach that we can do and still not reach some individuals who might not be familiar with the foundation or the program. And so, you know, and then that equates to those folks being underserved by us. And so this year we're really looking at trying to expand our reach into communities or groups or disciplines that have been underrepresented in terms of the applications that we see coming from those communities. And so we're partnering with some groups and organizations that are working in those communities so that we can hopefully extend our message, extend information about the program further and beyond the folks who already know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind of point I'll tap into is that, you know, we know that some folks may not recognize or identify themselves as artists. You know, the work that they're doing might be rooted in their tradition, might be rooted in their heritage. It might be something that's been done for generations. And so they may not see themselves as, you know, an artist to apply for this type of award and recognition. And so we're also working to recognize those folks and work with them to apply to this type of funding.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about you, Tristan? What are your thoughts on why it's a challenge to bring certain groups into this application process?
I think it's also really important to look at kind of fine arts systemically and what that looks like in Alaska, what that looks like nationally, what that looks like globally. It's a very difficult sector to get into. And I know a lot of people, including myself, I didn't see myself as an artist for quite some time until I was able to get kind of that get in somewhere or get my work shown somewhere. And it took a while for me to reframe what me being an artist looks like. And within kind of the confines of speaking as an Inupiaq artist, of colonialism and what that looks like. So just kind of looking at just how inaccessible sometimes these applications are. And I feel like Rasmussen has done a really great job at looking at our grants and our fellowships and looking at, like, what can we do better? Like, how can we reach these people better? Because it's not their fault that they didn't apply. It does, you know, that you do have to take some responsibility for that, but then also take responsibility as a foundation and looking at where we're at in philanthropy and where we're at with the arts and inviting people in instead of leaving people out. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that there's a whole series of information sessions and hands-on workshops, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. There's a big one coming up I mentioned in the introduction. It's a statewide hands-on online, like almost 3 hours or something like that. It's very intense on the 28th, right, Enzina? And I know that both of you are probably involved in running these and answering questions. But what's interesting is that the number of other information sessions you have and how you have partnered with community groups or even regional arts groups to tap, you know, part of the challenge here is the geography of this state, right? I mean, it's and you're not traveling out to these areas because of pandemic issues. So talk a little bit about some of the community partners that you have, you know, joined with to try to touch more underrepresented parts of the community that might not come forward and apply for a grant.
Sure. And I will say that this is kind of the first year that we're working on this type of outreach effort. And, you know, it's fueled by the pandemic for sure and our limitations to travel, but also fueled by Tristan's beautifully noted comment about working better to invite people into the conversation. And so, you know, every year we look at the program, we look at the application, we look at the guidelines, and we evaluate ways to make it better and more inclusive and more accessible to artists. And, you know, as Tristan mentioned, this is application is really rooted in a Western process, and we know that there are some barriers there. And so, you know, in terms of accessibility and reach, you know, in evaluating the application and, you know, the number of folks who are applying and the representation of folks that we are applying, we saw that there were lots of underrepresented groups and categories. And so we, this year, identified a few groups that we wanted to work with and are partnering with them. And so some of our partnerships look like, you know, we had a really great information session with Anaya Latin Dance and the Anchorage Concert Association. The performing arts were a category and discipline that were really underrepresented in terms of our applications. You know, typically we see about 300 to 500 applications annually each year. It fluctuates year to year. And just a window into how many choreography applications we saw last year, of those total applications were 3. And we know that there are more than 3 dance-based artists working brilliantly in Alaska. And so when we saw that, we knew that we needed to reach out better to those communities. And, you know, we have a partnership coming up with the Alaska Native Heritage Center, with Enlaces Alaska. We're doing some regional work with Kowarik and Keturvik and the Bethel Council on the Arts and Bethel Community Services Foundation. So, you know, we know we're not hitting every area of the state this year or every discipline that needs some outreach. And we're super excited to expand this next year and take what we've learned from these information sessions, which are fast and furious, hour-long meetings where Tristan and I run through the introduction to the program and introduction to the application, to these more kind of 2.5-hour-long info sessions and hands-on development, where we look at some of the questions in the application and how you start writing a response to those. So, you know, we're this is our first year with this type of partnership and this type of outreach, and you know, we're excited to take what we've learned and continue to make it better next year.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a tiny break right now. We're speaking with the Rasmussen Foundation. We're right in the application window for their Individual Artist Awards program. So we'll be right back. You are listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we are here today with Enzina Marari and Tristan Agnorak Morgan from the Rasmussen Foundation. Both of them are working hard to pull in applicants, artists, and getting them to apply for very generous and sustained and persistent support for artists, the Individual Artist awards. And, you know, I did the math, and it's something like more than $400,000, something like that, you know, annually going in directly into the hands of artists for projects, for a year-long focus on their work, and also to honor a distinguished artist in Alaska. You know, let me share our phone numbers with our listeners, and then I've got some more questions for Anzina and Tristan, and we're going to be welcoming Indra Arriaga very shortly to the show. If you have questions for these program officers and think you want to apply or wonder about something, please give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752, or send an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see, Anzina, something that struck me when I was thinking about, you know, the areas that people can apply in. I just want to run through the 11 areas, and you probably have them at the tip of your tongue, but I've got them also. You know, it's, you mentioned choreography, but crafts also are part of the application availability. Folk and traditional arts, literary arts and script works, performance arts, media arts, multidiscipline, music composition. We're going to hear from Sean Northover later, who was a recipient of a project grant in music composition. New genre, which is vague. We're going to learn a little bit more from Indra when we have her on, because she got a project grant in new genre. Presentation and interpretation and visual arts. That's just really, really broad. So, I mean, did you start out that broad? Were the awards that broad in the beginning, Anzina, or have you expanded those areas?
Sure, that's a great question. And, you know, I've been involved with the program since 2019.
That's right. Not forever. Since 2004.
Not 2004. But, you know, I will say that, you know, every year we look at those disciplines and determine ways to make them more accessible or more clear. And one of the notes about the Individual Artist Award since 2004 is that, you know, even though we have kind of 11 set disciplines, those are intended to be comprehensive of kind of the spectrum of creative practice. And we know there's lots of overlap with some of those disciplines. A crafts artist may also see themselves as a visual artist, for instance. And so we know there's lots of overlap. Some artists could apply and, you know, could identify under more than one category for sure. And so, you know, we ask folks to really look at the descriptions of each discipline in the guidelines and choose the one that best serves the root of their creative practice. And there's some distinctions there, and we've tried to clarify those. You know, for instance, between performance arts and presentation interpretation, there's sometimes a lot of confusion. So we've really worked at trying to clarify these disciplines so that artists can pick what best represents them. Mm-hmm. And that's important because, as you mentioned, we work with an outside panel of experts. And the initial phases of that review are within discipline. And so if an artist applies in the wrong discipline, they're being reviewed by a panelist in that wrong discipline, and that could impact their application.
Mm-hmm. We're going to bring on Indra here very shortly, but I want to ask this question. There's so much effort to draw people in to apply. Do you allow people to come in and show their application and get feedback, or... Because I realize the folks at Rasmussen do not judge these applications. So are people allowed to come in and get some feedback on their application before they finalize it?
Yeah, you know, we try to be really equitable and mindful about the support that we give artists. And so we want to navigate that in a way that is fair and leveling a playing field for all of those artists that apply. So, you know, with that in mind, we have brought on contract support last year, and we're grateful to have that support this year, and that is Karen Lowell, who is our contract program support person working directly with artists. And Karen, a lot of folks are familiar with Karen. Karen is an artist and did some really fantastic work with the State Council on the Arts. And Karen does work with artists to answer some of those heavy questions or unclear ideas. And so she does provide some feedback about, you know, what discipline and is this project even an eligible project and how am I supposed to come up with a budget, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important to note is, you know, as staff, once applications are submitted, we are reviewing them for eligibility and completeness, and we do not provide any feedback or criticism on the contents of the application. And that's not our role as staff. And
okay.
So if the application is complete and eligible, it goes to the panel and they make those determinations.
Right, right. So there is some, if someone wants to talk to somebody about something, they're probably going to end up with Karen, who we've had on this program before, a wonderful Alaska artist. And they can get some feedback and maybe some reaction, but it's more to help make the application complete. And once again, there's no judging going on within Rasmussen. I really want to bring in Indra Arriaga, who's been holding on the phone with us for a minute. Indra, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. Just going to tell folks a little bit about you, and then we're going to start talking about your project, because you won a project grant through this process, I think in 2019, right?
Correct.
Okay. So let me just tell folks a little bit about you if they don't know. You identify in your own website, your art website, as a Mexican artist, a writer, and a researcher working in Alaska. Your work has been shown internationally and nationally around the country, from Portland to San Francisco to New York to Texas to Florida and a lot of places in Alaska. You also, besides your artwork, you do economic and social research statewide, and I think that's perhaps somehow figured into your art, so we'll talk about that. You also serve on the board at Out North, a local progressive arts organization here with a mission to advance contemporary art in Anchorage and support underrepresented voices and promote cultural dialogue by amplifying the alternative voice. Indra, we have... trying to describe your project is a challenge for me. I put an image of your intaglio prints on our website so people can open it up and take a look at it. It's very interesting. It's a print on kind of like a telephone book page, so you see all these names on the page. And that you and I talked a little bit about that. But I'm also really anxious to talk about the work you did in Mexico. I think your work in Alaska has involved working in indigenous language. Can you tell us just a little bit about what you were doing here related to indigenous language, and then we'll move to Mexico where part of your project has taken place?
Certainly. So the work that I did here in Alaska with indigenous languages was through the Division of Elections. I was just honored to be the compliance manager for the Toyokuk settlement, in which my job was to convene language panels in six dialects of Yupik plus Chupik and Wichin, and we had to translate election terms into all the different languages, and we expanded the glossary from what the state had at 74 entries to about 180. And it was a journey for all of us, and it was a process, and I learned a lot about obviously, you know, working with different folks, and they became, you know, part of my family, and then that made it so I could learn a lot more about my own, like, literal family, and this kind of is what gave rise to Opaque Etymologies, which is the project that I worked on in Mexico.
Right, Opaque Etymologies. And I'm just, again, reading from a bit of a bio from the Rasmussen Center talking about your project, that you are originally from Jalapa, Mexico. And with Opaque Etymologies, you're working with poetry and prose, intaglio prints, and a performance exploring decolonization, identity, and language. And this was also done in affiliation with the United States International Year of Indigenous Languages. So, Indra, you come from a region in Mexico that has a strong indigenous language culture and history. I tried to do a little digging around to try to understand a little bit more. Is this the language that comes from basically Aztecs?
Yeah, so Nahuatl became you know, the Aztec-Torian Empire. So their language permeated most of Mexico. My region, there are several languages. You know, Nahuatl is one of them, is one of the major languages. There are over 1.5 million speakers of Nahuatl in Mexico now. But there are other, but it's mixed with other languages like, you know, Totonacan and Mexica
So there's more than one. Yeah. Yeah. But what you have done, and as you told me, and we're going to get ready to listen to a little excerpt from two musical pieces that are a part of your project. And the interesting story is that we're going to hear it in two languages. We're going to hear it in the indigenous language. And Indra, say that word for me again so our listeners can hear it, the indigenous language.
Nahuatl.
Okay. And then we'll also hear it in Spanish. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about it, why it was meaningful to you. And so let's go ahead and listen to the first one, whichever one is ready, for about a minute.
Chinki amika amika ne kwali nikmati ni mitson chichinas te kwali chikaki.
And so that was the Spanish version, and am I right, Indra?
No, that's the Nahuatl version.
Okay, so that was the indigenous language, and we're going to go ahead and listen to just a tiny bit of it in Spanish. When I looked at the words, they look like they sound so different because the words are really look different on the page, and so it's a little hard for me to know that we were listening to the indigenous one because I was expecting different sounding words. But anyway, it's just really interesting to do this. And now we're going to just hear just a little bit of the same song in Spanish, and then we'll talk about the song and why it was important for you to have these indigenous singers do it for you and where they did it, which is part of the story. So just a little bit from the Spanish version of the song.
Ay, qué bonito es volar a las 2 de la mañana. A las 2 de la mañana. Ay, qué bonito es volar, ay, mamá. Subir y dejarse caer en los brazos de una dama. En los brazos de una dama. Y hasta quisiera llorar, ay, mamá. Me agarra la bruja y me lleva a su casa.
So Indra, tell us where this recording was made and why that was so significant to you. You told me it was made in a colonial church from the 1500s. So why was that the perfect setting for these songs to be recorded?
Well, the Spanish version was actually done in my house in a back room that I have in Mexico.
I didn't know that.
And that's my cousin singing. The version in Nahuatl was done in Songolica. So Velika Veracruz, which is up in the mountains, very near to where I was born, but really hard to get to if you go through the mountains. And it's an indigenous village. It was important to have it there because it's the dialect of the language that we speak. And so when we were doing it, it all kind of came together. Originally, I was working with the teachers there to help me translate the contents of opaque etymologies. And from there arose a conversation about, oh, well, let's do a song. And this is a song that we chose, which is called La Bruja. It's the witch, which has nothing to do with witchcraft.
Okay. I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It has to do more with mythology than witchcraft. And so originally it was going to be just one person just singing it, and then it became two and then three. When I got there, it was 11 people. And they all came, in our indigenous clothes. And we didn't have a place to do it. So they're like, well, let us find out. And we ended up doing it in what is the oldest church in the region that was built in 1567. And so it was incredibly important to be in that church, the first one in the region, which is really small, and it's all rock and brick and everything else. And to do it there, to do it dressed in traditional clothing, the women were barefoot, to sing it there in Nahuatl, a song that has nothing to do with Christianity. And it was amazing. We thought it was going to take a couple of hours. It ended up taking until 1 a.m., and everybody stayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did the choral arrangement first, and then we did individual voices, and the entire group stayed until we were done. It was
a moment. It was a special moment. Yeah,
definitely a moment.
Yeah. Indra, we're going to take a tiny break right here. To our audience, we are speaking with Rasmussen Foundation guest and Indra Arriaga, who was a recipient of an award, and she's telling us a little bit about how she used her funding from the Individual Artist Award. We'll be right back to hear a little bit more from Indra. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we were just speaking with Indra Arriaga about, and we were listening to some songs she had recorded related to her project that she's working on. And I guess, Indra, I want to finally draw this to a close. I was so drawn to it because of Alaska's indigenous languages and the revival of these languages and the value so many people find in them, many young people returning to language. Here in Mexico, similar story where you recorded this music in what was a colonial church. And so now I'm going to leap forward to a little bit to Joan Kane, a local Alaska and probably an international poet, wrote an introduction for you. And one of the things that she talked about was, people going through grief, which is the loss of languages, but also seeing possibility. And to me, I guess I'm asking you, is this true for you, that seeing this and hearing this recorded in this colonial church, which might have been a force that had, disbanded indigenous arts and culture, but here this group is using it and producing something very beautiful from it. So are we getting a little bit at the essence of what you're communicating through your project?
Yeah, and I think Joan Kane's participation in this project is an incredible piece of it because she synthesized what the work is really about. I mean, in a way that I could have never done it because I'm immersed in it. And it kind of ties not just, the different relationships within the work and the different relationships geographically, but the geographies themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uniting the continent, it's what it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of this project, I hope to present it back in Sangolica, so it'll have a full circle, feeling to it. But yeah, Joan talks a lot about grief. She talks a lot about the fragments in opaque etymologies, because it's not a straight read, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You really do. It's in the three languages, so you have to like really do some work as a reader to engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a wonderful job at describing what that is. You know, the fragments, the fractals, and mm-hmm. let me tell you, this was not easy to translate into Nahuatl. It took yeah. months to translate this. You know, this what seems like a pretty short intro into Nahuatl, because
yeah.
the concepts are so different.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's amazing.
Well, I'm so appreciative that we got to share just a little bit of what you were doing. We do have Sean Northover holding to come on. But I do want to say, Indra, thank you for taking the time out and sharing your work with us. I want to ask you one more question, just briefly. If you had to give an applicant encouragement to apply, what would you say?
I would say, you know, by all means, go for it. And I absolutely, you mentioned it earlier, do not be discouraged if you don't get it. But also look at what your project does and try to take a step back and see where it connects with others, because I think that's where the opportunities are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I was drawn to this, you know, just how important Indigenous language is here, and then hearing you reflect it from your homeland. And then also, I was just uplifted by the idea that something beautiful can come out from all this fragmentation. It just has a kind of almost redemptive or wholeness to it in the end. But anyway, Indra, I have to say goodbye and say thank you so much for joining us, for providing that music so we could share it with our listeners, and also talking about your project.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I'd like to welcome Sean Northover. Hi, Sean. Are you there?
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm really great, and I'm so appreciative. I know that Sean has a difficult work life. He worked all night, and he still got up this morning to join us and talk with us. You know, I wanted to tell people a little bit about you, Sean. Let me see. I have a little bit of bio from you. You're from, I think you say you grew up in New Jersey, went to Atlanta at age 13, and then were drawn to Alaska because you said you needed to live someplace that was beautiful. Ed, do I have that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And I know you're a young father. You've got, I saw a news story about you from the summer, participating in a Black Lives Matter march with your two-year-old son, I think, and, you know, wanting him to see that he has a voice. And I was moved by that. So when did you receive your Individual Artist Award for a grant project?
I believe July 1st.
Of 2020?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you received it in music composition, correct?
Yes.
So I guess I want to go ahead and take a moment and listen to one of your songs. This is not from the project. This is before the project. But we'll come back and talk about what you plan to do. But let's just get a little taste of your composition. This is a song called DNA Live at Jimmy Max. And then we'll come back and talk about the song and what you're going to do with your grant. So let's give a quick listen to this.
Got my eyes on you. She got me grinning like the Cheshire cat. Yo, make me get a try or two. Oh, oh. Purposely in black so you won't go back. And you wouldn't know unless you tried it. But you fight, baby. And straight knocking me. But you know you like it. You get excited at the thought of this. This is our DNA. Not avoid love, you can't avoid it. No, 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 you know it's in our DNA. Do not avoid love, you can't avoid it. No, 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 you know it's in our DNA. Do not avoid it. You know it's in our DNA. Do not avoid. I'ma kick it like working it out. Can see us working it out, talking about our past. Still none of this matters now. This feels like I could fly. Love turns my gravity down, so you're holding me down. Wanna keep you so close to me, now stay close to me now. I'm saying my love will never die, so I for you, baby. So keep my love deep inside your heart, ay, till it's in your veins, ay, cause it's our beating, ay.
All right, so that was DNA live at Jimmy Max. Sean, you know, I got a link to your SoundCloud collection of music on our website so people can go listen to more. This song and some of your other work is very focused on love. Is that a topic you know, it seems perfect for song. You're drawn to writing about love?
Yes, I am. Love is a very big part of my life, whether it's friends, family, you know, anything. I feel that love is a big basis to just life in general.
Mm-hmm. And tell me what you're thinking about with your project grant from Rasmussen. What will you do? Are you actively working on new songs? What do you see coming out of that?
Oh, yes. I actually have a few songs that I'm really excited about. Some that are personal, some that are, you know, focused on the general matter of everything that we go through day to day, especially some inspired from quarantine.
Oh, I was wondering. Yes, I actually was thinking about it. I might come circle back to Adina, ask her whether they expect quarantine projects or pandemic projects or political election, you know, projects. But anyway, you were inspired by quarantine, huh?
Yes, yes, indeed. You know, and you know, it was when I was writing that song, it was more so of the routine and just going to work, coming home, you know, and limiting our contact with people. And you know, that in that song, I describe how you can feel as if you lost a connection or lost love, you know, with the quarantine. But at the same time, you can find love within yourself, in yourself, because we've spent so much time inside.
Product will be, or you envision having an album out. Will you be adding those to the SoundCloud, or will you be producing a downloadable music or any kind of an album?
Yes, I plan to release at least two songs before the actual project, and those will be like, you know, little teasers towards it. And I'm hoping to get 8 songs done, but you know, That's setting my bar kind of high to get, you know, a lot of production done. I aspire to use other musicians as well and get it professionally mixed. And a lot of things they've helped me with as far as the artist award went.
Yeah, yeah. And how was the application process for you?
For me, you know, it was a new thing. It was my first award that I've ever applied for. You know, I was with my wife, and my wife was like, "Babe, you should do this."
She's got your back.
Yeah. I was like, okay, let's do it, you know. So we sat down and typed night after night, and she proofread, and I typed again, and I proofread. Man, it was an ordeal, but it was definitely worth it.
Oh, that's great. I think I can hear your son in the background. It's like all those Zoom meetings where the dog comes in the door or the child comes in to get the parent. That's the way we live right now, right? Here, no one is in the studio. All of our guests are on the phone. So, you know, sometimes phones ring. We can hear children in the background. You know, Sean, I want to ask you, if you were to give advice to an applicant, what would you say to them? What would you want them to think about?
Not holding back on what their art means to them. Definitely going big on expressing the impact and the influence that they would like to create and amplify with that award, and just what they would do in general without it. You know, for me, it was very important to me that I express being able to be an individual, you know, and being able to just be yourself in your own body, you know, in your own mind, especially with the last couple of years that have gone on. You know, that goes back to me bringing my son out with me. It's important for my son to know that he can stand up and express himself without feeling like he should back down, you know. And I'm a first generation American through my parents, who came from Jamaica. You know, so my parents, especially my mother, made it a very big point for me to be a strong individual and not to be swayed easily. So that's pretty much what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm.
When you're writing your grant application, express yourself and be sincere and be true.
Mm. Do you think that having gone through one experience, you might be thinking again, well, there might be other grants out there or other awards that I've never thought about? Do you think that having applied once here at the Rasmussen might lead you to look for some others elsewhere?
Yes, definitely. If it would further, you know, me making more music and getting out to more places to share, you know, how I feel and the message that I'd like to bring as far as unity and you know, just being humanity or being humane in a sense, you know, I would definitely aspire to try it.
That's great. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to you now, and I hope you get to tuck yourself back in bed and get some more sleep. But I really appreciate that you joined us, let us listen to one of your songs, and talked a little bit about what the application process means for you. And I'm going to say thank you so much, Sean, and rest up. And I'm going to go back to Enzina and Tristan just to round out the show. We've got about a minute and a half or so. What do we want people to leave with thinking about this application process? I'm going to go to you, Enzina. That some of these things we've already talked about at the beginning of the show, but, you know, what is critical? I guess I might say the statewide workshop on the 28th. But Enzina, what would you say?
Yeah, you know, I was so touched by what Sean just said.
Oh, me too. Yes.
You know, sincere and really communicating the heart of your project and the heart of your work. And, you know, absolutely encourage folks to attend our statewide workshop on the 28th that will help start to craft that language, but really show up as who you are and communicate through your application to the panelists why you're, you know, you do what you do as an artist.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard because creativity, it's coming from inside of you, and maybe it hasn't had an audience yet. So, you know, confidence doesn't always come along with artwork. Right, Enzina?
Right. Absolutely. It's a vulnerable process,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it's about pushing through, presenting your best self and letting go of the outcome.
Right, which is hard to do because you feel like you've bundled your whole self up and presented it. And if you don't receive what you were asking for, you might feel rejected. And that's, we had a program a couple years ago on resilience, you know, among artists. Let me go quickly to Tristan. Thoughts, what would you like to leave people thinking about this opportunity for artists here in Alaska?
Yeah, I really think that just applying for an individual artist award in itself, regardless of what happens, is investing in yourself as an artist. And I think just reframing it to look at that and the benefits of applying for it, even if you don't receive an award, it's still a really big investment in yourself as an artist. And I think it's really helpful to continue to think about what you do, how you do it, and how you're going to communicate that with other people.
Tristan, I'm sorry to have to cut in to say, I have to say goodbye, but thank you, and Zena and Tristan and Indra and Sean, and of course, our listeners. Next week on Hometown Alaska, we're talking about owls, along with some very enthusiastic local owl watchers. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Emmert is our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.